On his first day in office, President Biden issued an executive order rescinding Trump-era travel restrictions on majority Muslim and African countries, known as the Muslim travel bans. Immigration advocates praised the reversal of what they saw as discriminatory policies. But as NewsHour Weekend's Yvette Feliciano reports, they now say Biden administration policies must go further and that their work is far from over.
In January of 2017, Sarveen Hagighi was gearing up to head back to her home in Chicago, Illinois, after visiting family members in Australia. But 2 days before her flight, she got the news that in his first executive order, Donald Trump had banned foreign nationals from 7 predominantly Muslim countries from visiting the U.S. for 90 days. Hagighi was not a U.S. citizen, and her native country of Iran was on that list.
I cannot tell you the feeling, just the feeling of not knowing what's going to happen. The feeling that you're not welcome to go back home to your husband and to your friends.
Hagighi moved to the U.S. in 2013 and had a U.S. green card when the ban was implemented in 2017. Nevertheless, her lawyer warned her that in the immediate aftermath of the executive order, there was chaos at U.S. airports, with many travelers being detained despite possessing visas and green cards. She waited for another week before flying home and canceled her layover in Texas.
I wanted to land in Chicago just in case something happens. I wanted to have access to my lawyer.
The stress of the situation took its toll.
After that, once I got back here, I had to do therapy for a few sessions because I didn't sleep or really eat. At some point we were even discussing to move to Canada. And it was just heartbreaking.
As a U.S. citizen herself, Libyan-American Anwar Omish was more worried about her family living under threat in Libya, which was in the midst of a civil war.
Conditions in Libya have been so unstable. And so it was almost like a double strike, right? Where it's like, on the one hand, we can't see them and that's sad enough. And on the other hand, we can't even offer them safety if they need it. One of my cousins, wasn't able to come back for school. And she was one of the people who was turned back at the airport.
Omish protested in Boston, where she lives, and at the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., demanding an end to the so-called Muslim ban.
It was a very scary and difficult time. I'm a visibly Muslim woman. I grew up after 9/11. I'm not a stranger to Islamophobia and to feeling, unsafe or uncomfortable in a lot of spaces. But I would say the fact that that was validated at the highest levels in that period was definitely was scary.
R.T. Kohli is executive director of the civil rights organization Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Asian Law Caucus. It is a core member of the No Muslim Ban Ever campaign, a coalition of more than 100 organizations that formed in the weeks following Trump's executive order.
Many people come here for the freedoms that America espouses, right? The freedom of religion, that you will be judged as an individual, not by your ethnicity or race. For Muslim and immigrant communities, this was a political awakening.
A cascade of grassroots activism and lawsuits led to several blocks of the ban by federal court judges. That was followed by Department of Justice appeals and multiple iterations of the ban. Then, in 2018, the Supreme Court upheld a third version of the ban. It largely restricted citizens of predominantly Muslim and African countries from emigrating to the United States and barred them from working, studying, or vacationing here.
Thousands of people have been impacted for 4 years and have been suffering these consequences.
In 2018, the State Department reported an 80% drop in visas for citizens of the 5 countries consistently on the travel ban list, including Iran and Libya, compared to 2016, when no ban was in place. In 2018, 5 years after starting the naturalization process, Sarveen Hagighi obtained her U.S. citizenship. But under the new restrictions, her elderly parents back in Iran weren't able to come visit her in Chicago. In 2019, she gave birth to her first baby in Australia, so that her parents could join her and meet their grandchild.
Every time that I talk about it, I just think about all these months that my parents could be here with my son, and the fact that my son cannot really experience the love of his grandparents up close and personal, that's something that I can never, get back.
Back in December, members of the No Muslim Ban Ever campaign met with President Biden's transition team, outlining specific steps they want the administration to take in the coming months, such as expediting denied visa applications from people in the countries impacted by the bans under the Trump administration.
They applied, they paid fees. We asked to ensure that the State Department would identify those people and create a process that was accessible so that those people could continue their visa application.
Coley is hopeful about the Biden administration's response. Biden included a no-ban act in the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021, unveiled in Congress last Thursday. If passed, the act would prevent any future administration from imposing similar bans to the one imposed by Donald Trump. For Anwar Omish and Sarveen Hagighi, a no-ban act would be just one step toward healing a wounded relationship between the U.S. and its Muslim community.
For me and like a lot of other immigrant families and advocates, like this is, you know, the baseline. Like we really want to be doing better than this. Undoing what Trump did is not necessarily progress. It's just fixing the regress.
It doesn't matter now we have a president that he's standing with us and he's supporting us. But what if somebody like Trump comes back again? We need to make sure that we have the right policies in place. I think that's when we can have the United States of America. Because no matter where you're from, what religion you follow, what color your skin is, you all can live together.